This podcast does not constitute medical advice. All changes surrounding medications, diet, and exercise should be made in consultation with a professional who can assess your unique health circumstances.
Welcome to the Pattison Program, where you'll learn how to improve your health from the inside out. And now, your host, Clint Pattison.
Thanks for joining us today on this episode of the Pattison Podcast. And let me start this by saying one of the most common questions I get from people who are thinking about doing this program is, does it work for psoriatic arthritis? It seems that the people with psoriatic arthritis are very undercated for with a program that works and a program that provides tremendous and long-lasting relief. And I've had several testimonials come back from clients who've purchased the Pattison program for psoriatic arthritis, but none have been forthcoming to jump on a podcast. Well, that's about to change because although our guest today hasn't strictly done the Pattison program, she has followed a similar approach with a low-fat, plant-based diet to get her through the tougher times and is now in an incredible position where she's pain-free and has extraordinary results to share with us. And so, Nicole, thank you for coming on this episode.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited, you know, because it's one of those things where we like to compartmentalize our diseases based on the diagnosis, what the doctor tells us. But it's my strong belief that if you have an autoimmune condition, we all have a very similar underlying cause. And so I think we're going to feel that that is more and more the case after we go through your journey and the processes that you use today, that you're going to share with us today. So why don't we start with where it all started to go a little haywire with your health? I believe we talked before we started that you had psoriasis even when you're a toddler. So why don't we start back when you're a little one?
Way back.
Yeah.
Way back. Yeah. I don't even really remember when not having psoriasis. I think my parents told me that sometime during my transition to eating foods, I developed it and there's very distinct patches on my ankles and on my elbows. And that was just something that would kind of get bigger or smaller as things went on in life. There was a stress-related component for sure my whole life. I remember a couple times things happening, like our house got broken into and I got all these rashes on my arms because they took a lot of my stuff. I don't know why, but They did. And
maybe the thieves had a lot of children.
I suspect they were going to sell it on the street for drugs and they just took whatever was easiest.
Right. Yeah. Things. Yeah, sure.
And I would say over the years, I always had that going up and down. And I had some weird things happen that I would look back now and say might be autoimmune. Like I was always getting injured, always. If I didn't get lots of exercise, like lots of exercise, I would just not feel good. Like less good than other people, more tired, just kind of off in a way that I recognize now as just being just like mildly inflamed probably.
Right. And the exercise would always give you a sense of relief.
It was necessary.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like it was a different person.
I love that. Yeah. Exercise is necessary. Yeah. That's going in a tweetable. Yeah.
And even my family would notice. They'd be like, we like you much better when you exercise. Because I would be really grumpy because I just didn't feel good, you know, walking around like, So I got really sick at some time in like high school for like a month. Like my glands swell up on my throat really big and I was so tired. And they figured it must be like mono or Epstein-Barr or something, but it couldn't ever get a definitive diagnosis on that. So it was sort of unclear. And then that would happen like over and over. Like if something weird or big would happen in my life, you know, disturbing kind of things, not just like, hey, hooray, I got into college, but Big thing.
Mm.
I would have a period of just like, I could sleep for 15 hours, no problem, days and days in a row.
Wow.
It wasn't necessarily painful, but it was sort of just like deep exhaustion. And then I just kept getting weird injuries, you know, like, I somehow hurt my shoulder or I somehow did this, but it wasn't severe enough or long enough to really do anything about, or I was young enough to be like, whatever, it'll go away. not really thinking about it. So that was like my 20s, you know, was that. And at some point in my 20s, I actually hurt myself enough so that I couldn't exercise to the degree that I used to be able to. That went on for a while. And as I transitioned into my 30s, I guess, I'm trying to remember.
How were your symptoms for your psoriasis and also for your fatigue levels when you went through a period where you couldn't exercise?
Yeah, my psoriasis, I didn't pay attention to it. It was more of a vanity thing, I guess you would say. Like if it was in the summer and I couldn't wear the clothes I wanted, I'd be upset if it was bothering me. Or if it was itching a lot, I might notice it. But I didn't think about it too much otherwise, so I don't remember.
And how bad was it? I have friends who have some degrees of condition. And I mean, are you talking like big welts on your back or are you talking about mild, patchy stuff?
Pretty mild.
Yeah.
I mean, it was noticeable enough for people to be like, what is that? But it was, you know, right? Thank you. But it wasn't like palmar pustular or anything like that. It wasn't any of the really extreme stuff. I have relatives who have what I have and also psoriasis, and they ever like the psoriasis part way worse than I ever did.
Okay.
So it was always relatively mild, but very consistently there.
Okay. So the fatigue was probably more of a severe lifestyle impacting thing.
Definitely.
And then you had the psoriasis as a vanity problem. And then we got through it, would all that sort of continued through until psoriatic arthritis also presented its ugly head in what, around 2010, you said, before we started?
Well, I got diagnosed in 2010, but I would say that I think some people might remember that in 2008, there was this big market crash, financial collapse and everything. And my husband and I were in this period of moving across country to a new job that he therefore then subsequently lost. And I was in New York and he was in California and we had left our apartment and left our jobs and we were like, what are we going to do? So that was a pretty big stressor. And that's when joint pain symptoms started to show up. So there was a good 8 months of transition from that.
Wow.
And I started to get, my knee would just like swell up. I think you know what that's like.
Mm.
And it would be painful, always painful. And that was the primary symptom. And then as that went on, I guess you would say it never really resolved itself. Like I went to a doctor, a regular doctor, and he was like, what do you want me to do? I'm not a joint doctor, you know? And I was like, thanks a lot. Okay, great. So I kept looking for, I went to like an orthopedic person and they were like, well, you have a Baker's cyst. Looks fine otherwise. Okay. And I woke up one morning and my shoulder, like I couldn't move my shoulder, like past some point, and I figured it was just like the way I slept, but then that didn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like accumulating, like I got a knee brace, I have a shoulder brace, I have like a sling. And then one day I was just like drinking a glass of water and something in my wrist just went pop and I could not move my wrist. And that went on for months. So then I was just seeking some kind of diagnosis. And I went to doctors and they thought that I was addicted to pain meds and I just wanted like Vicodin and stuff. So they were like, you want some Percocet? You want some Vicodin? And I was like, no, I really want to resolve whatever the heck is going on with my body.
Right. Maybe the people who come in looking for those drugs, like the actual sort of drug seekers, think it's a good idea to just put a bandage around their knee and their shoulder to make it look like they're in pain, right?
Right, right, right.
And you've walked in with the same outfit.
Yes, yes. And I was like that. But I had swelling, so I was kind of like, dude, you know, what do you think I'm doing here? And then let's see, what happened next?
When did you go and see a specialist, like a rheumatologist, who was able to give you a diagnosis and start talking drugs?
Okay, so I had a period of time where I'm just going to interject this little commentary. It might be because I'm female, but everybody thought I just wanted attention. And that I was kind of like playing. So I went to several different doctors and I got the same like runaround. And then finally, my husband's boss has, I think, rheumatoid arthritis. I'm not sure. My husband's boss at the time. And he said, maybe she should go to my doctor, my rheumatologist. Mm-hmm. So I just made an appointment with him, like off our plan, you know, just total, no referral, just went. And like in 5 minutes, he was like, oh, you have psoriatic arthritis. I was like, oh, great. At first, I was like, great, I know what it is. And then I did more research and I was like, oh, this is not great. I don't like this at all.
That's it. Yeah. Okay. And what was his recommendations?
Let's see. So at this point, I was intermittently using a wheelchair.
Oh, my God.
And like not all the time, but there were days when I had to. And there were definitely days when I couldn't dress myself or take a shower or do really anything to function. Had to drink out with straws, you know, when you can't hold stuff.
Yeah.
So he recommended that I go on Imurin, which probably has another name, azathioprine. That's what that's called. And I think it's a sulfa drug that's similar to like 6-MP. And so similar also to methotrexate, except for a little, it's different. It's not the same class of drugs.
It's a disease-modifying anti-rheumatic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. It's not exactly the same process, but it is that.
Yep.
And I went on that. I started really super small dose and slowly bringing it up. And I didn't really have much symptomatic changes on that, but I did have a lot of side effects. Is this call still going all right?
So it was like a lose-lose. So you were getting no symptomatic relief, but you were now getting side effects from this drug.
Oh, yes. They were bad. I mean, one of the things, it suppresses your bone marrow production. I'm not sure if that's what methotrexate does. I don't remember. I was never on that. But my white blood cell count started to go super low.
Very dangerous.
Very dangerous. And I started getting all sorts of infections. I would have canker sores in my mouth all the time. My gums were bleeding and my teeth started to bother me. Terrible headaches. And the doctor just kept being like, you're doing great. Here's more. Let's bump it up a little bit, you know? And I remember saying like, well, I don't feel better. I feel worse. And he's like, oh, you're going to feel like this on this drug. And it was like, well, okay.
Yep.
You know that.
Yep.
And I guess this is what there is. So
yep.
I'm going to go onto the internet.
Yeah. Thank God for the internet. I tell you, just as an interlude here, thank God for the internet for people in third world countries too, because a lot of our clients who do our program have zero help, zero doctors that they can go and see, and they're able to do a modified version. They might not be able to find some of the things that are a little bit creative that I recommend, like seaweed, for instance. Like, it's hard to find that in some of the more underdeveloped countries. But boy, if they can just cut back on some of the foods that they think is even in their culture standard and emphasize a lot of things that our listeners know all that I recommend all the time, yeah, that's what makes me feel greatest about being able to share all this information is to the people who have no help from anyone. It's they're the people that I get the most joy of helping. Okay, I just wanted to add that. Okay, so you went on the internet and tell us who did you find, who did you follow, what did you do?
Oh, so I went on the internet and one of the first things that came up was Dr. McDougall's article, Arthritis and Diet, or Diet and Arthritis, something like that.
Yep.
And he has a website and it's all this information and it's totally free. And like what you were saying with the third world countries, it's a really easy, cheap way to eat like basically plants.
Yes.
You know, so it seemed like one of those things where I was like, well, what can it hurt? I'll try this, you know? Like I was already kind of trying to avoid animal products because the general word around was that they're probably not helpful, anti-inflammatory kind of stuff. And I remember, though, I found out sometime in maybe November, I found his website, but it was coming up on the holidays, and I was like, I don't want to do this yet, you know? I'm just going to wait. I'm going to wait until after January 1st. So
this is common.
Keep taking these ibuprofen or whatever. What's that called? I don't remember the
non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Yeah.
Take those, you know, like candy and then just function.
Yeah.
And so I started doing pretty much his program with some extra eliminations right away. So I stayed away from, I guess you would say, like nightshades.
Yep.
Citrus and wheat on top of the animal products, oil kind of stuff.
Yeah, kind of like he's got his own elimination process. So it sounds like you kind of either stumbled upon it or you did something on your own accord very similar to it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think I looked around and there was some book I found, like Barbara Allen has some book that's on Kindle, and I looked at some of the stuff she did, and then there's some other book I found that was like by a functional medicine doctor that had all these ideas for stuff. So I kind of did a mishmash of those things. And so I started like January 10th, I think, pretty sure January 10th after New Year's. And I was still taking the Imurin. And then after I switched the diet, I started to have terrible side effects like heart palpitations, trouble breathing. I got this huge rash all over my torso. And these were listed as the side effects that you have to call your doctor right away and like go to a hospital.
Wow.
So I called the rheumatologist who did not get back to me right away.
Right.
He didn't get back to me until I called four times and my husband called twice. And then finally he gets back to me.
Wow.
Says, we'll take you off the drug. And once these pass, we'll put you back on. So I said, okay, well, take me off the drug, but you're fired. And I'm not going back on that. Like, I'm looking for another rheumatologist because.
Wow. Good for you.
I mean,
that's dangerous stuff. Yeah.
It is scary.
Yeah. Very scary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So this is getting interesting now because you've now going into a drug-free zone and trying to rely on the dietary side of things. And this is a territory that doctors start throwing their pen across the room and stuff.
Yeah.
So I want to hear what happened.
So that doctor, of course, I stopped going to him, but I needed to get my files and it gave me a bit of a hassle for that, but it's legally you have to. So I managed to get them and I found another rheumatologist, and that is maybe 2 months later. Like, I'm off drugs for 2 months. And so right away after, I just even went to sort of a different diet than was even a semi-vegan, healthy-ish diet. I would say within 2 weeks, my fatigue went away pretty fast. The psoriasis went away already, like within 2 weeks, just gone.
From when you're a toddler until when you started this approach with a plant-based diet, you had psoriasis your whole life. And then you shifted onto a low-fat plant-based and you eliminated it in weeks.
In weeks, 2 weeks. And I know that was the thing that I was like, okay, I might not have all my joint pain resolved, but this is definitely something. Definitely something. I took pictures of it to send to my parents who still lived across the country. And because they were sort of like, what is this crazy thing you're doing? You're sick and you're not eating well. We're worried, you know, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And
I love how it's totally crazy to change your diet to something that's healthy compared to totally normal to take an almost impronounceable drug that'll give you 8 side effects and nearly kill you.
Poison.
You've got to be normal to take. Yeah.
I'll do so much out of that.
Yeah. Go ahead. This is fascinating.
So that happened real fast, and there was a reduction in swelling and a reduction in pain. Like, it wasn't gone, but it was a large percentage
reduced. And listeners need to also know that, you know, there is a period of maybe 3 or 4 weeks with these disease-modifying drugs where the drug is still in the system. So you've probably you've got that long tail of drag off there as the body starts to clear the drug out of the system where there's still some activity going on. I know you said it didn't do much or if any symptom relief anyway, but so you're going through that period. You're in the middle of almost like the eye of the cyclone here between drugs. I'm not sure. I'm about to learn from you in a second if you went back on drugs. But so the other drug has left the body. Your psoriasis is gone. And now you're noticing a somewhat reduction in the arthritic pain. Okay. Over to you.
Okay. All right. Yeah, my new rheumatologist said what you basically just said. He was like, oh, well, you feel better because the drug is working still. And I was kind of like, maybe, we'll see. But I did have that in mind. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I just have to wait and see. Uh-huh. I mean, my psoriasis is gone and it was like getting worse on the drug. So I didn't mention that. I forgot to mention that. It was very inflamed on the drug in general.
Right.
So I never went back on any other drugs since then. Wow. I've taken ibuprofen probably less than 6 times a year too, even starting at that point. I was really, I guess you could say I'm kind of like an all or nothing person. So I just was like, well, it's probably bad for me. You know, like, there might be something to do with leaky gut. Like, I don't know if that's real or not, but people seem to say that it hurts it, so I shouldn't take that.
The ibuprofen, absolutely, and it certainly does hurt that. Yep. So here's the big problem. When you go off a drug and you've still got some inflammation and you're still trying to find that magic set of low inflammatory foods and exercise programs to keep it all at the absolute minimum, and this is a challenge for some of our forum members who are determined to try and stay off medications.
Right.
The reality is, although, you know, and that is possible, but the reality is you have to have low inflammation levels because the inflammation itself is a source of more inflammation in the body. So it is the snowball effect. It's a cascading effect. And so what I had to do is whenever my pain levels started to rise a little bit, I had to immediately reset, go back to the most basic of foods to drop the inflammation levels quickly and effectively, because if I tried to sort of push through the pain and just hang in there and pretend that I was going to just lower it with the same set of foods and the same set of exercise, I was kidding myself, absolutely kidding myself. Yeah. You have to take the plug out of the inflammation bath and let it totally drain back to zero before then commencing your normal range of foods again. So now, how did you do that? How did you, if your inflammation is still there, I know from my experience that you're in still a problematic zone. So how did you get it from, say, there down to there?
It took some time. Well, for me, there was definitely like a hormonal cycle to the pain levels that I noticed like pretty much right away. That became something that I would expect, that like leading up to menstruation, my pain would go up and then it would just drop afterwards. And so I would just kind of be like, well, this is happening and it's going to go away. So I didn't do much for that. Like, all I just was that. Like,
yeah,
this is happening here and this is predictable and I can handle 2 days of this and then great. And then I would always feel a little better after. So I felt like something's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it seemed to go a kind of a different pattern than that, where I had fluctuations of inflammation, but it seemed to me, and this is just like my observation and maybe my opinion, I was heavier. I lost a lot of weight. I gained a lot of weight before I got sick, and then I was losing weight as I
was healing.
Healing. And it seemed when there was a period of where I had lost kind of a few pounds, there would tend to be more inflammation as I was losing the weight. And then when I would sort of level off, it would go down. And I heard this explained to me by a plant-based doctor that I work with, that sometimes your fat stores can store things that you react to.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you process them, then that can be a, you know, higher period of inflammation.
Well, I also subscribe to that theory. I don't know if it's more than a theory, but so at the moment I'm not. Yeah. But I've heard that through Dr. McDougall talking about people with gout. So he talks about it with gout clients, when there are acids stored in the fat cells. And so with gout, you're very much dealing with an over-acidity situation or the chronic acidosis. And so and a lot of people with gout tend to be overweight. And so as they lose the weight, folks with gout can see an increase in symptoms. And I recall that from Dr. McDougall's teachings. So I would not be surprised if the same thing may happen in, you know, with other conditions where acidosis plays a role, which inflammatory arthritis is certainly one.
Yeah. So I noticed that. But in terms of like the baseline food stuff, you know, like those, I never veered off that. Like I haven't, well, a couple times, but I didn't ever regularly go off things. I was pretty, very strict.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what some of those, during the toughest times, what became your baseline foods?
My baseline foods at that time were sweet potatoes, squashes, like winter squashes, you know, like butternut or acorn, yum. And green vegetables, leafy greens, and fruit, some fruit, not all fruit.
You remember which ones were generally your safe zone?
Blueberries, raspberries, apples. I ate a lot of bananas, but actually bananas, I discover now, are a problem for me. So they could have been part of the problem.
And me. They were always a problem for me. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And blueberries, raspberries were never a problem for me either.
Yeah, no, they were always great.
Mm-hmm.
My teeth were purple all the time.
Yeah. And so high in antioxidants. I think, you know, I've gone a bit gray since I've not taken as many of them. And I've just started to eat them again, not from any other reason than I'm trying to lower the gray hair. I tell you, as a total aside, I created a video one time, which I'm sure when I mention this, people are going to want to see it because it is actually hilarious. But when I was on my raw food diet, I created a video because I discovered that my hairs were going from gray back to black again or dark again.
That happened to me too.
You saw that too?
Yep.
Wow. It's insane, isn't it? Now,
and my vision got better. Like, I still need glasses,
but
my vision has improved too.
It's well, so you actually require less of a graded, less of a prescription on your glasses. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it? So for me, that happened during the raw food with the hair. When I shifted back to completely cooked and only like salads and a little bit of fruits as opposed to getting it all from raw foods, then my hair, I have not seen that again. I've only seen more gray as I've aged. You know what I mean? But anyway. That's interesting. Okay, so your baseline is very baseline. And so most of your calories, I guess, were coming from the sweet potatoes. And because the fruits, I found when I eat, no matter, one day I, over a period of a week or so, I ate like 3,000 calories a day just from raw foods, and I was still losing weight. It seems like has to be a degree of the starchiness in your diet to maintain your weight. So did you lose a lot of weight on that base? You must have had a lot of weight loss on that baseline.
I was losing lots of weight on the baseline for sure, but it wasn't super quick. I mean, I think there might be a slight difference in rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis in that people with psoriatic arthritis tend to be on the heavier side and tend to hold weight a little bit. This isn't scientific. It's just like there's all sorts of comorbidities, and a lot of them are like diabetes and like heart attacks and things like that, and they're related to obesity, and obesity is like a comorbidity. So man, I don't know what that is about. Mm. But I was losing weight steadily, and I think I started, I can't remember, like 160, 170, something like that, which is pounds. I don't know how to translate that to other things.
Right.
And after about 8 months of eating plant-based, I was 30 pounds lighter, let's say.
Okay. I mean, it's not – we see a lot more of that sometimes amongst people with rheumatoid.
But that did change, actually, when I did some modifications to the diet that I was eating. And I started to include a lot more raw food. And then I got down to 112 pounds, which was way too thin.
Yeah. The raw food will do it to you. I've got some pictures where I took them myself where I just – like I did not look well on the raw food, and it was very hard because the results were outstanding, but I couldn't stand my physical appearance. I've always been thin. I weigh the same amount now that I did before I got sick. I'm a skinny guy. I've always been a thin person, but I became very, very thin on the raw food diet, and it was actually the biggest thing that eventually led me to get off it. I could handle the foods. I became used to it. I love the connection with feeling well. But, boy, I just didn't like my face in the mirror. I didn't like my body. And people would say to me, or like they'd have that look in the face like, this guy's in trouble. Do you know what I mean? Even though I was feeling healthier than what I was on the drugs and on the crappy diet.
Totally. Stick man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, this is fascinating because it really does overlap with my past as well. I had to do a tremendous amount of raw, and I also stuck with a very baseline diet for 12 months. I was eating just pseudograins like buckwheat and quinoa, my seaweeds and tons of greens.
Oh, quinoa. I used to eat a lot of quinoa. I
used to eat that as well. Oh, fabulous. Wow. Okay. So there is so much in common with what we're doing here. I mean, yeah, I hope people are really kind of piecing the puzzles together like we are in this conversation. Okay. So very excited about how you're going with this. And then when did you really start to be able to tolerate more foods, and how did you bring them back in, and did you test them one at a time, or did you just, and then how long did it take and all that?
Okay, all that. So let's see. So I was doing kind of a starch-based McDougal-ish diet for about 5 months, and I decided that things weren't happening fast enough for me. And I had heard about water fasting. So I was like, I'm going to do that because, like I said, I'm kind of an all or nothing person. So I did on my own. I just want to say, as I say this, please nobody do what I did. Don't do it like this. It's crazy. It's not totally unsafe, but it isn't recommended.
You mean an unsupervised water fast?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the key, isn't it?
On my own, at my house. Yeah.
Yep.
I wouldn't recommend doing that. Mm-hmm. So I'm telling you what happened, and I want to just make sure that's a big caveat.
Thank you. Yep.
So I'll tell you, water fasting is interesting. So it was horrible in that I had terrible headaches. I felt awful. I felt like dizzy, lightheaded, tired, but also ill. I got a fever. I got some uveitis, which is one of the things that psoriatic arthritis can attack is the eyes.
Yeah, one of our clients in our forum has that and is working with that. It complicates things so much because she's on methotrexate, so she's trying to balance the doses of methotrexate to keep her eyes in check, even though her body feels better, and it's hard to it's hard to at the same time have both things perfect so that she can lower the drug.
Right.
But anyway, I'm familiar with it. It's a frustrating thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I had some of that came up during the fast, but then also went away during the fast.
How long was this?
5 days.
5 days. Okay.
5 days. Like I said, I just do things. And it was great because the pain went away. I mean, the pain was like gone by probably the second day.
Gone. Yep.
Yeah, totally gone. I remember like lying in bed being like, if only I didn't feel so awful every other way, like I would just never eat. Like, this is great.
Totally. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So when I started eating again, though, inflammation came back, like almost like within 20 minutes of the first amount of food.
20 minutes. But wow. Yep.
I started with carrot juice, and I find out now I have a problem with carrots. So. Well,
also everyone really shouldn't be just drinking carrot juice. It's not health food. It's just pure sugar.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or beet juice, just straight beet juice.
Straight beetroot juice. Not only will that, make you think that you've done a blood stool the next day because it, right, and you start panicking, what the hell just come out of me? Oh, me, I got to go to the hospital. But also I used to get dizzy on that stuff, and it was, again, it's just pure sugar.
Crazy stuff.
Dizzy, man, like drinking that. Yeah. For those people thinking about doing a shorter version or a supervised version of a fast, what I recommend and is part of our program is the first 2 days is a 2 days cleanse. It's a 2 day fast. Now, what I do in that is encourage people to drink celery and cucumber juice instead of the water. And I think celery and cucumber juice is the only thing that's better for the body than water, because it's pretty much just water, but it has nutrients and they are alkalizing for the body. So it can't get much better than celery and cucumber juice. So I encourage people to drink as much of that as possible. And the second part of it, and this is a bit unique to me and what I experience and what I recommend, is I tell people to just eat raw leafy greens. So like baby spinach and collard greens, and just snack like you would if you're a giraffe or something, on these things without oil, without anything. And what I find is that it allows just maybe a small bowel movement during the 2 days. It just does a little bit of putting a little bit of fiber through the body so that we might be able to nudge a little bit of matter out the other end. Some people don't see any movement during the 2 days and other people get a little. But the main thing for people is exactly what you've experienced. And this was life transformative for me when this, how I had the experience.
Yeah.
Is when you know that if you stop eating, you feel perfect, it changes your life. It opens you up to a whole paradigm of thinking that you never had before. And virtually everyone, there is a footnote on that, but virtually everyone who stops eating with inflammatory arthritic condition feels perfect within a few days. And so one of the reasons I include the 2 day cleanse is not because it does actually scientifically help with leaky gut, but, and this is actually the main reason, is because I want people to see the world through the eyes of having no pain, and then they know that the gut is the cause of their disease.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, this is a long haul kind of way to treat yourself. So it's good to get that starting point and be like, I'm doing the right thing. Like if I had didn't have psoriasis, I don't know what I would have thought. Like I got that feedback right away. Right. So that really helped me to stick with it.
Yep.
But yeah, and celery and cucumber juice is delicious.
Mm.
Like it's so tasty.
Yes, it is. And here's what's interesting is the people who say to me, like some people email me often, like want to share their feedback, which is great. I want to hear that. But the people who say, oh my God, I almost vomited. Some people actually have vomited drinking celery and cucumber juice. Yeah. I don't say this exactly in these words, but like the truth is in my mind, I'm thinking, good for you. You are going to benefit from this program more than anyone else out there because you are seriously messed up. I mean, if you are nauseous from drinking pretty much 95% water and some alkalizing minerals, you are in a messed up situation. You're going to get the greatest benefits. Good for you. You're lucky. Spew it up and drink it again until you can handle it. It might take a while, but I mean, it couldn't be more natural for the body. So, you know, it just tells you how toxic and messed up people become if they can't handle some juice from a cucumber.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there's my little rant.
There's your 2 cents.
there's my 2 cents. I'm having a great time chatting to you because we've got so many dovetailing opinions on these things. Okay.
That's why I contacted you, actually, because I became aware of your program way after all this. And I was like, I've seen a lot of testimonials about different autoimmune diseases and different programs for it. But they all seem to happen like lickety split. Like people are like, within 3 days, that was perfect and running a marathon. I'm like, nope, that wasn't me. And it's like, this is one of the first things where I encountered like the kind of like, oh, this could take a while, but also the way that you did things and the way that what worked for me when I experimented are so close. Like they're really surprisingly close to what happened. It's pretty interesting.
The foods themselves, in fact, everything. I mean, if you could have actually, with this food group, have done our program and it would all be exactly the same. The only thing would have been potentially the blueberries and raspberries. But see, after 12 days, I encourage people, there are a group of foods that I encourage people to test. So you could have just randomly tested those foods next and everything else is the same because you did the quinoa, you did the sweet potatoes. They're my baseline foods. I mean, this is like literally like surreal, right?
I know.
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
All right, and the fasting as well. I tell people, look, if you are absolutely determined to try and keep off the medications, first of all, the doctor needs to be on board because no one should be staying off medications just because they're strong-minded and don't want to be on them. Your joints are getting worse. They're deteriorating. Right. It can affect other parts of your body, eventually organs, all sorts of things, right? So we don't want to deny drugs if you don't have another path, an alternative, right? If nothing else is working, you got to do drugs because it's an essential to have low inflammation. That's a non-negotiable. But you've chosen to do the fasting. And I say to people, why not just once a week eat the baseline foods just one day? Or if that's not even getting there, if you're really, really super, super committed, then just do one day where you just do the juices and then just see how this goes for a while, especially if you've got some weight to lose. If people are lucky, I consider people with arthritic conditions lucky if they have some extra kilos or extra pounds, because we all lose that eventually when we're healing. And it's good to start with a bit of credit, you know?
Yeah. Makes it easier. Softens the blow, so to speak. Yeah.
That's right. So how often did you do the fasting, and was it something that was on a systematic basis?
Well, at first I just did that 5-day fast. And it was very interesting because right after the fast, the inflammation came back. So I was like, oh, well, that's too bad. I did this big thing and nothing happened. But in the subsequent weeks, I kept eating well. Obviously, I didn't change how I ate. And then things started to really change. Like I still had some wrist pain. I still had some knee pain. I still had some shoulder pain. The wrist pain went away. And I can almost like feel it going away. Like there was this way I would move my hand that used to be bad. And it would almost feel like spider webs were breaking along the muscle, but in like a good way. So that was very heartening and that felt very positive. So I had a good result after that fast. But since the fast itself was so hard, I was kind of like, I don't really know what I'm going to do, but great, this helped.
Yeah.
And around that period, I felt better enough that I got a little bit full of hubris, I guess you could say. And I was like, because we always, me and my husband had this idea when I started that like one day I was going to go back to eating like a normal person. And, you know, maybe now is the time. So I had this thing where I, nothing crazy, but it was still vegan, but it was more processed. And I think I accidentally had dairy in something, like somebody gave me something that had dairy that I didn't know about. And I woke up in the worst pain ever, like total body, like I was in like a cast in my whole body, couldn't move, stiff, so much pain. And that was the day that I realized, oh, I'm always going to eat this way. Like, this is it. Like, this is it. Like, I can't get in this fantasy that I'm going to stop it. This is what helps. And this is what I have to do. So I still wasn't planning on fasting, but I kind of tightened up the diet, I guess you could say, and primarily did that. So I'd been doing more research and read other things by different people, and I decided that leafy greens and cruciferous greens had to play a more major part in what I was eating.
Hallelujah.
So this is related to your what you were saying about people who vomit after the celery cucumber juice. So I made a green smoothie, my first ever green smoothie.
Yep.
I live in Los Angeles. I should have been drinking it, but no, I wasn't. And it was like kale and blueberries and collards. And I drank it, and arugula or something. I don't remember. Pomegranate juice. I don't know. And I drank it, and I felt like instantly totally bizarre. Like my whole body was burning. Like my skin was burning. And at first I thought like, oh, I can't do this, right? So I cut back a little bit. But as I ate them more, I began to tolerate them better. And like in my mind, you know, my little rationalization of that whole situation was like, they were working their magic. You know, like I could feel the magic happening. But it was pretty fascinating. So when I added more greens into my diet, that's when I started to lose a lot of weight.
Yeah.
Lots of weight.
Mm-hmm.
So I got down real low, down to like 112 pounds, which was super skinny.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was freaking out. And I was a little bit concerned that maybe I wasn't absorbing food well, you know, because I just didn't know what was going on. And I still wasn't feeling perfectly well. In fact, as I lost the weight, like I was saying before, I started to have these periods of just like crappiness, like inflammation, but then it would like peak and then it would go lower than it was. And then
yeah,
it would
right.
peak and then it would go lower than it was.
Mm.
So it was this fascinating trajectory. And so I just kind of kept at it. And maybe 6 months later, I tried more of a modified like vegetable juice fast and had similar results as the first fast. So I just kept doing that periodically.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So periodically meaning what? Every couple of months you would do a fast?
Longer, probably every six months or so, 6 to 8 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Gee, I think, you know, it's just a reminder of how long this takes. If someone's yeah. hoping that there is a quick fix to this disease, they're yeah. absolutely kidding themselves. Sometimes I'm even surprised when, you know, sometimes people can get rid of all their symptoms and feel tremendous and get off their drugs with rheumatoid in about, say, 6 to 12 months. But that's quick. That's quick. That was way quicker than me. Way quicker than
that's
me. So when I read the feedback from people, I'm like, wow, you know, I think some people just have an extreme intolerance to, say, dairy, right? Or like one category for them is off the charts. And then other than that, they're not too bad. And they're the people that respond quick. And by quick, I mean like that amount of time. And then the rest of us, it's just a total mess. So, you know, I always, when I give talks about this, like at conferences and stuff, I say that, you know, I always refer to the study that showed that people with digestive disease, right, people whose digestive system are like all messed up, have a better digestive system than people with rheumatoid arthritis. Okay, so people whose condition is digestive disease, I'll pull a study out and I'll put it in the show notes for people, okay? Because I can't think of it right now, but I'll link to the actual study. You know, it's like, yeah, but the people with rheumatoid, they were by far the worst of anyone we've looked at. So, yeah, this is the degree of problems that we're dealing with. So, you know, it just takes so long, and that's just really sort of so evident to me listening to your to your testimony here. It's just, you know, just a reminder of how much patience and determination you have to have over such a long period of time.
Time and adherence. Time and adherence. Yep. Just keep at it. Do the Dory thing. Just keep swimming. It's like a... It's interesting that you mentioned that. I was thinking about this. I read a study yesterday, or an abstract of a study that was in an article that Science wrote it, right? And it was about, so I tested positive for the gene HLA-B27, which is related to, there's a family of diseases, psoriasis, psoriatic arthritis, ankylosing spondylitis, I don't know how to say it. And apparently in the gut of people, and Crohn's disease.
Right.
And they all are a similar gene. And apparently in the gut of people with that, there is some specific organism, bacteria, that's distinct that may or may not be a problem. It's just, it's also interesting how that the gut is such a huge part of what's going on.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's move towards a close. Tell us, how are you now? What does your diet and lifestyle look like, including any supplements and your exercise? So could you kind of give us a bit of an overview there?
Yeah. My diet is more expanded than it was, than it used to be when I started. I would say after a couple of years of eating really strict, I got to a point where I was like, no, I feel good. And then I started testing more foods. So I eat a wide range of foods, but they're all whole foods and plant-based. I don't cook things like in the oven because I'm sensitive to acrylamides, which are like the toasting things, the whatever the process of sugars and heat that creates the brown stuff on cooked things.
Okay. I've not come across that before, so I'm glad you shared that.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard about them as being sort of carcinogenic, and I just wonder if for whatever reason, how I process stuff, I don't process things well, so if anything's mildly harmful, it's extra for me or something.
Extra work for your body that's been through a lot.
Something like that, right. So I eat a large degree of green vegetables and lots of salads always. Mm-hmm. I eat starch foods and I eat beans, and I don't really eat grains much. I actually find they don't quite work for me.
You're still doing the pseudo grains like quinoa from time to time? Or
I can do those. Yeah, those don't have the problem.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, isn't it? It's very interesting because this is one of the arguments that the poor people that end up on a paleo diet say, oh, we read that, you know, cereal grains are bad for us. What they don't understand is that that's not in the program that I recommend. It's not what you ate. See, this is the narrow path to success that exists for people, is that you can't be eating the meats if you want to get well. You cannot get to a point that you are at in your life with zero pain, with, you know, no psoriasis anymore, if you're still putting animal proteins and animal fat into your diet. Like, people write books and become best-selling authors because they've improved a lot on the paleo diet. We don't want to be just improved a lot. We want to be like you are. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, this is the mindset. So I just find that really like a key point.
Yeah. You know, it's fascinating. I've met a lot of people in my journey online because I don't know anybody in person actually who does this. And I've met lots of people who do lots of different things. You know, bone broth is a big thing that a lot of people do. And, you know, paleo is a big thing. And people, it seems like the people I meet who do stuff like more paleo, they improve for sure, and it's definitely good, but there's a point where it stops, you know, and it's like, I feel like there's a point where it stops for everybody, you know, like, I'm always going to be managing this disease, this is how I manage this disease, and that's fair, but it is kind of like, I mean, come on, don't you want to be even better?
That's the thing.
I can't say for sure.
I think you've actually given it more of a glowing report than what I see, because when people do about 12 months on paleo, they start to turn a corner in the wrong direction. You see, anyone can stop eating dairy and oils and improve instantly. You bring me 100 people with rheumatoid, you take them off dairy oils, instantly improve. But that's a no-brainer. No one should be eating that crap, okay? Like, everyone you see, I'd see cars driving by, everyone sitting in that car is going to eat dairy and oils today. They're all going to get fat and sick, okay? So the hard part for people is this concept, the association with the meats, because they don't know what else to eat. And so, as I said, there's a narrow path, because when you've got inflammatory arthritis, then the cereal grains are going to upset you, and that brings into trouble things like the oats and things with wheat in it, like bread. So you start panicking, what do you eat? People don't know that something like quinoa and buckwheat, and you can eat so many of the sweet potatoes. These things, they're a narrow range of foods that you're left with that support the gut, don't inflame you, and provide you with calories and very, very good quality food as well. So look, it took me years, Nicole, to work this out. Years.
Yeah.
I was beating my head against a wall for so long, having surgeries. I couldn't walk. I mean, boy, there's a shortcut available with what you've just shared and what I do and share with people.
Yeah.
And if people don't take that shortcut and want to go a long way around and stick with their meats, then I don't feel sorry for them. I mean, you know, how many podcasts do we need?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned that. And when I think about it, I only hear the beginning parts. I don't hear 12 months later. And a couple people, yeah, it did start to get worse. But, you know, I think it's really great that you have both the set of different talents. You know, like you have the science background, and you, I think, also to some degree, having a performance background makes you much more suited to this whole situation than the average person. Like, that you can, and the experience of actually going through it, that you could share this with people, because all I wanted when I started looking for solutions was someone who was like, oh, psoriatic arthritis and diet, here's what happened, here's what happens next, here's what you do, like a path that there was. Even at the places where they do stuff, there's a lot more on rheumatoid arthritis than there is on psoriatic arthritis.
There is. Like, there's a lot more. Yep.
Yeah. And psoriatic arthritis is almost like lumped in with it, but there's differences, or then it's not. And so it's just very cool that you're doing this. And like you said, the internet, you're sharing it with like all over the world. I think that's really great. It's really just cool.
Yeah. Thanks,
Thank you.
Nicole.
I listen to your podcast at my work, so it's super fun.
I'm sorry. What's that?
Often listen to your podcast when I'm working. I work for myself in my own home. So I, you know, like company, but also it's really a rare circumstance to interact with people on any level that's not like typing, who know what is going on. And everybody has such interesting stories. And like, you mentioned things that are fascinating to me too, that I had thought of that I might like implement now, you know. So it's all very interesting and exciting to listen to, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. I know that this episode with you and you sharing your stories and what you've been through and what you've had to do will play a big role as well and be fascinating to a lot of people. But what I'm super excited about is that I'm going to create a page on our site specifically for psoriatic arthritis, and this video will be kind of the backbone of that information. So people can watch this. They've got like whatever this is, like an hour of like in-depth questioning on someone who's been through it all. And then people can get a really good sense of what's involved. Sure, it's probably overwhelming for a lot of people if they're thinking what's ahead of them if they got to make these changes. But look, even implementing half of what you have done will transform their life, keep their medications at lower levels, give them more energy, prevent them from getting other diseases in the future, at least minimize the risk of getting other diseases in the future, and give them that empowerment that they have, like a puppeteer of their own life, control over this disease to a large extent. And that gives people hope again. And you've done that. So thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome. Okay. Electronic high five for Nicole.
Right back at you.
Yeah. All right. So I think thank you so much. I think I've expressed my gratitude in the last few things that I've said for coming on this episode. And as I said, up on pattersonprogram.com/psoriatic-arthritis or maybe psoriatic arthritis, it'll be easy to find. I will put this and a bunch of other testimonials for people who've been through a plant-based low-fat approach. You know, I believe it is the way forward, because I believe we all have the same underlying cause when we have an autoimmune disease. So thank you very much, Nicole.
Thank you so much, Clint. Nice meeting you.
You too.
You've been listening to The Pattison Program. For more information, visit pattisonprogram.com.